So the title for the talk tonight is A Fundamental Shift. I had numerous subtitles that emerged. The following somehow got selected. And the subtitle for the talk is, Is There a Shift Beyond My Shit? See if you can see how the my shit part is the shit. It's one thing to check. What we're actually always looking at is our original nature. What we're actually always looking at is our original nature, but we don't always see it as that. When we're looking at another person, so to speak, we are looking at our original nature, even as our mind might be telling us all kinds of other things about what we're seeing. So let's take an example that I think would be fairly easy to relate to during this time here in these days. We've all been eating in that dining hall. We've all been taking different seats at different times. Sometimes you may find that you like a certain area. Sometimes you even might like a certain seat. You might be the kind that just moves around. Don't think about it at all. Don't particularly go and sit next to any particular person. Or maybe you do. Maybe you see something there and you want to go there. Okay. Have you noticed the popularity of the window out onto the backyard? It happens every time I come here that there's a certain amount of focus on that window and sometimes the seats near that window. Have you ever noticed that when you're looking out into nature, in part, you're looking out into that nature because you like it. You like what you see there. There's something interesting, there's something attractive, there's something fun, something relaxing, enjoyable. You're looking at your own nature. Have you ever noticed that when you're looking at nature, and it might have happened for some of you while you were looking out that window, and you can think about whether you did that or not, that something relaxed perhaps, and maybe the idea about this body, this thoughts, this meditation, all just went away. And there was clear seeing without even the idea that clear seeing's happening, because that's what clear seeing is. There isn't an idea that's added on to it. Oh, this is clear seeing. Now you're thinking about it. And this is happening for human beings all over, not just here, where they're looking at nature, they're looking at the natural world, the scenery, and something opens. Something resonates. It resonates so strongly in some that some attraction beyond just attraction, attachment develops, and they want to go back to that spot and look at it again and touch it again and smell it again and feel it again. I like this place. What place? We're looking at our own original nature. That's why one of the words for Dharma is nature. the natural world, which we're intimately a part of, even when we think we're not. We're feeding off it. It's breathing itself into us. It's completely interconnected in all ways and places with what you call yourself. This thing is made of the same ingredients, the same elements. It's so important to us humans that we don't just look at the nature, walk in the nature, be in the nature. We make art of the nature. We draw the nature, paint the nature, write songs about the nature, write books about the nature, take pictures of the nature. Do we know what we're really looking at? Do we know what we're really seeing? You may have noticed at times in your life, and in the meditation as part of life, of course, that there's a tendency at times to measure things, to gauge things, to gauge the meditation, to gauge one's moment, to gauge that period of life, to gauge the experience. It's not quite judging per se, it's gauging it, measuring it, checking it against other things, evaluating it. And what is a lot of this evaluating about? It's about evaluating how things are feeling, and even deeper, more subtle, how things are being perceived. Okay, so there's two things there, the feelings. And have you noticed how many human beings gauge, evaluate, measure their moment, their life, based on how it feels? How it feels. And often not seen in there, although in some cases it sometimes is how it's being perceived. Because how it feels is based in part on, largely in fact, on how it's being perceived. So part of what happens in a situation like this is that we actually really come at times face to face with this. We come really to terms with this. And let me use a kind of a strong word, the obsession with feelings and perception. How it feels, how it looks, how it seems to be. Give an example of perception that's fairly useful. Have you noticed how the perception of time passing varies at times considerably during these days? At times it can feel like time is going by very slowly. Other times it seems to go by very fast. Other times it seems like it just flew by, disappeared. This goes on. You don't have to be meditating to see this. That's perception. The clock is ticking at the same rate. Even the ones that don't keep the best of time are still pretty close to the same rate. It's not changing. And yet the perception of the passage of time, how quickly or slowly, is varying quite a bit. Having a not so good time, having a not so good meditation, so to speak, time seems to be going by pretty slow. Meditation's flowing along, everything's moving, all the bells are ringing. Time's flying. Have you noticed the perception that some of us walking around here with the bell in hand are ringing it in a way that seems more interesting to you? And others are ringing the bell in a way that seems a little less interesting to you? Or the mind goes, what? Was that the bell? That was a clang. Oh my gosh. I remember. I was here before, and Paul gave an instruction on how to ring the bell. And I remember he didn't do it this time. Maybe that's why they're clanging it. Oh, but that one who walks with the gentle touch... that one, that mysterious one. And it's working for me. Yes. It's so weird. It's just the bell. So we come to terms with this at times. This obsession with the feeling, perceptual world. And this is a bit of a shock. But it's a necessary shock. The feeling, perceptual world is only that way because of the perception that this is all about me. This is about me. This whole thing's about me. I might say that it isn't. I might act that it isn't. I'm going to talk to others in a way that suggests to them that it's not about me. And I'm going to brainwash them into thinking that it isn't. And I'm sure I can pull it off. They look entranced. This is working. And I'm going to act like I know that when they talk, I'm holding them in a space that it's not all about them. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to give and share openness. And it's all about me. The open me. Even serving others in all the different ways that humans serve others. Underneath, insidiously at times, not to judge it, just call it what it is, insidiously at times, there's a, it's about me, the generosity that I have, the humility that I have. It's about me. Gender differences in conditioning are interesting, yet also aspects about the conditioning of me are not necessarily limited to gender. The me doesn't bother with gender sometimes. It just splashes itself all over. It does not discriminate. And yet see how the mind, feeling, perception, thought relates to this. Granted, in this culture, in many other cultures as well, around the world, men are at times somewhat more indoctrinated into the it's all about me, while women, still even to this day, as enlightened as we may think we are, collectively, many more women are still being trained, transgenerational training, in the caretaking and at times codependent trance, caring, caretaking, not just the children, if there's children, but the guy. The all about me man. Meanwhile, men can be unconsciously, sometimes consciously, codependently enmeshed into needing women to be codependently enmeshed with them so they can continue on with their own unique style of all about me-ness. That's a new word, maybe, meanness. Somewhat important and challenging facts. In Great Britain, a country that I like very much, I like it when I think about it, I like it When I visit it, I like it. When I leave it, I like it. I don't like it as much as Holland, but I like it in the UK. 30,000 women lose their jobs annually in the UK due to pregnancy. It's highly, highly unlikely that any man in the UK or the United States is going to lose his job or his career is going to be threatened because of his pregnancy, whether it's intentional or accidental. Around the globe, the work is done by 2/3 of the women, while they get 10% of the total income, and they own 1% of the properties. This is not just about power and money. ₹70,000 schoolgirls are deprived every year from a basic education. 1 in 4 women who are in partnership with men or marriage experience domestic violence. And once again in the UK, 2 women per week are killed by a former or current partner spouse. This is not just about power and money. It's about ignorance. All about me. Slightly different angle. I received some teachings from you today. I receive them every day. All I have to do is sit here. Or not sit here. I can be up in my room. You might have noticed that at times you would like me to shut up. You might like me to speak different. You might like me to say what I'm saying, but say it differently. You were not given a Zen stick when you came here, but if you were, you might have wanted to whack me with it. Thank goodness that it's not a Zen retreat, because if it was, I would have the Zen stick, and I would have the permission to whack you. And then you could receive that or not. You know you're in touch with some very important material in your body-mind process when you're not liking, not connecting with, not enjoying, judging the so-called teacher. Because it's impossible that the teacher screwed up, because he's been trained from childhood to be impeccable and magnanimous in all situations, particularly when being projected onto. Meanwhile, he's wetting his pants. There's 2 kinds of movement there. There's projection. I'm not feeling this. You are. And then the deeper one is transference. Transference is an interesting process. It's not just something that happens in therapies. It happens all the time between human beings. There's something emerging in me, because again, it's all about me. There's something emerging in me that I don't fully understand, recognize, accept, know, and it begins to move towards another. And that other is you. That other is you. There's got to be a you if there's a me. And it's trying to resolve itself. Freud had a very interesting insight into this. He called it the repetition compulsion. It's the tendency in the human being to compulsively repeat certain things behaviorally, emotionally, in the mind, and to do that at times in relationship with other people, as if to resolve something. Very deep insight he had. Sometimes in the mind is looking for the ideal. It's looking for the ideal somewhere. And if the other is not the ideal, then it gets the transference. Because what's the ideal other than a fanciful projection? You don't remember very easily how it felt to be held, to be put down, to be bathed, or maybe not, to be left alone, or maybe not, to be fed, or maybe not, but it's all in there. The me seeking something through how that me looks at yous and tries to sort itself out, understand itself, make sense of itself, come to peace with itself. I used to think that I really had a teacher when all I could feel was love towards him. And then I realized that I really had a teacher when all I could feel was hate towards them. And then I realized that I really had a teacher when I could feel love and hate towards them. I like to share short little quotations from children sometimes in teaching environments. The one that comes to mind is a quote from 4-year-old Noel. When asked about love, she said, "If you want to learn to love better, start with someone you hate." Let's be really clear if we can. Caring about this body-mind process, taking out time to really get in touch with it, to let it open up if it's closed or hardened, to let it balance, to let it harmonize, is not a selfish act. It's a necessary part of awakening. It's an act of respect, dignity, and wisdom. But again, the training may infiltrate. The conditioning training may infiltrate. And if I've been trained to serve others, male or female now, if I've been trained to serve others to the extent that I consciously or unconsciously engage in my own neglect, then I might find it's hard to even take out the time to attend fully and properly to this body-mind process. And if I do, I might think that what I'm doing is selfish, or maybe I'm told so by others. You may have friends or associations in your life that you'd have a challenge explaining what you've been doing for the last 4 days. Especially if they said, "How'd the navel gazing go?" And then you were on the spot to give a few insights. Well, it got a little bigger than the navel, but there was some gazing. Actually, we used a different word. There was this thing called clear seeing. And then their eyes glazed over. Oh, another member of the family's coming. I'll have to share her now. So I have a sister who I deeply love and hate. And love and hate. Today I love her. And when you're touched by something, intuitively and instinctively, you want to share it. And sometimes you don't know the risk involved. The transference and projection that's going to come back. You just don't see it ahead of time because you're not that psychic yet. Your meditation's not that developed. All you can do is watch the moment. You can't see the next moment. You'd like to, but it's not there yet. Maybe it was for the Buddha. It seems like it was. It was there in the text. You could see all of it, past and future and everything in between. I can't see, and if I get up higher, I still can't see out there. So you tell others about something that's worked for you. So I tell my dear sister about these things that I'm doing, and I'm very into the whole thing, and training, and experiencing this and that, and doing every single retreat I can possibly do. And I'm telling her about it. She's not asking. That's two different things. Watch it. And she's, well, I don't know, you know. Well, you could just come and try. Just give it a shot. It's very, the food is good. Just give it a shot. Give it a shot. It's okay. It works out. It's safe. You know, I'm saying these different things, you know. Trying to speak in a way she'll appreciate and understand. Of course, what I'm trying to do is get her to act. Because, you know, see, all about me is still operating. I'm helping. Don't you see? So years go by, and she's not really acting. And then I go to a retreat, and we haven't talked for months, and she's there. She decided to sign up. Fluke? Serendipity? Luck? Bad luck? She's there. I open the door. There she is. Oh, sis. She's almost shaking right away. She's like, "I'm here." I said, great. You know, we're getting ready to have the dinner. You know, we haven't started silence yet. We're going to have the dinner, and then we're going to have the silence the next morning. Right? So I'm talking with her a little bit, and she's still kind of shaking. But she seems to want to be here, I think. Have dinner. Go into the silence. Have some meditation that evening. Go to bed. Next morning, get up. Come into the dining hall. I see her in the dining hall. We're in silence now. I see her in the dining hall. She's shaking more. The limbs, you can see the limbs are shaking. She's getting her food. And what really, really is hard, whether you're shaking or not, is to drop your plate in there. Now, some people drop their plate in there and they just start laughing. And other people drop their plate in there. Steve's got a plate story you can ask him about. So she's shaking. She's got her plate. She's shaking. And she finishes the meal, and I finish the meal, and she comes straight away up to me, and she says, "I have to go. I can't do it." She packs and leaves. Years go by. Years go by. She says, "Slow but sure, I'm meditating for a few minutes a day. I'm meditating for 5 minutes a day. It's helping me. I'm reading this book. I'm reading that book. It's helping me." All about me story says, "I helped you. I helped you. I helped you." Without adequate care and attention, I might find myself enslaved at times by thoughts, feelings, and impulses telling me what I must or must not do, whether I'm male or female. On the other hand, if I've been trained to focus on feelings and thoughts and behaviors and the response to my behaviors, lots of responses to my behaviors, and these pertain to the perception of me, I may find it quite difficult indeed, to admit the potential arrogance, entitlement, and conceit involved in such a position. It might even be a trance that suggests kind of care and focus on the feeling, perception of me as the way that awakening and freedom is going to take place. At any point, a profound insight can arise. The insight is, there's nothing about life that's linear in actuality. The only thing linear is the thoughts. And they're not even that linear, are they? Check them out. When they really get going, it's a smorgasbord. Mm-hmm. Is my nervous system doing this? It's like pinball. Nothing about life is linear. Waking up, liberation, freedom are not processes. There is no actual path to them, and in fact, it's the other way around altogether. Awakening is the end of the notions about path, linearity, and progression. And finally, it's the end of the story of me. And whether we know it or not, the story of me is bit by bit, or so it seems, being absorbed into beingness. Because that's where the story of me came from in the first place. Not only is the cultivation, and it is a cultivation, of the perception of me not a path to happiness, but in fact, there is no actual me who gets happy or is happy. There's happiness, but it doesn't belong to anyone, because nothing belongs to anyone. We're renting without any rent. You don't have to pay. You don't own anything. Even if your name's on it. Meanwhile, the hardest one to have metta, loving kindness for, is oneself. Looking for love and respect from others is because I haven't quite learned yet how to love and respect myself. So I'm looking for somebody else to mirror back to me what I don't quite see when I look in my own bathroom mirror. It all just happens, doesn't it? In different ways for different folks. In the position I'm talking about, I still don't know who I am, even when linearity falls away. In most cases, I may still not know who I am. No wonder I find that not everything that's arising is being met by love and compassion. And how am I actually going to be attentive to others, really attentive to others, unless there's an adequate attention to the place where the attention to others comes from? You know how they do on the airplanes. In the case of an emergency, the oxygen mask will fall down. Put it on the children first, and then yourself. It's all over the place, the suggestion, whether we listen to it or not, to care for others. It's quite understandable that things arise and they're not always met with love and compassion, because it's not clear perhaps where love and compassion come from. We hear, and the mind associates to love and compassion, turn it into a concept, turn it into a feeling, turn it into a perception, and now I'm going to work at being loving. It's all about me. I'm going to work at being compassionate. I remember being taught loving kindness meditation and compassion meditation, and when I first started to do it, it was worse pain than insight meditation. And the instructions either weren't going in, remember, because it's like, what do you hear? Because a lot of times, I think I heard exactly what you said. But what I learned later is that's not your perception. But I didn't hear anybody saying, when you do this meditation, the hatred inside of you, the anger inside of you, the fear inside of you, the tightness inside of you, the non-loving of yourself inside of you might come up. I kind of just heard, oh, now it's time to love. That should be good. I can do that. Wait a minute. No, I don't know. Maybe I can't. Okay, all ideas about waking up are actually all about me. All ideas about enlightenment and freedom are actually all about me. All ideas are simply that, they're just ideas. Actually, all ideas are about you, even when you think it's about something else. And, I hope it's clear, there's no point in trying not to have ideas, because they're going to come. And there's also not a lot of point in holding on to the ideas as a way of trying to see the truth the ideas point to. Just seeing that ideas arise and pass is so critical. Whatever the idea is, to see its nature. Huge, huge revelation, huge insight. They don't refer back to anyone who's having them. And this can be directly confirmed. It doesn't actually matter whether they arise or don't arise, once it's clear that they are arising and passing by nature and that they don't refer back to anyone who's having them. Has it seen that ideas move through a space of presence, and this presence is not in any way actually affected by the ideas? Then it's very easy, actually, for the idea of me to be seen as just that, another idea. You don't have to meditate for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, or have additional lifetimes. Idea of me. No actual me, yet there's all these processes that are called the me. All these processes that are called the you. Can't have a you unless there's a me. Starts with me. The actual I, or me, has never been found. Like we can find this carpet, name it, touch it, see it. The me word has no object to land on. To see that. My guess, my hunch is that if we could do it over again, which I sometimes think about, I wonder what it would be like to do that over again. What would I do different there? But if we were 5 or 6 years old, imagine, and we weren't too distracted, we weren't too caught up, fighting with anything, we just kind of sit and maybe finished our meal sitting there. And someone started speaking to us in these terms. My suspicion, my hunch is that it would just completely go right in and be immediately recognized. And what do I use as some data to confirm this? When my oldest child was about 12 years old, she used to have some difficulty going to sleep at night. And sometimes she would come to me or her mother and tell us that she was having a hard time sleeping. And sometimes her mother would go with her, and sometimes I would go with her. Now, when I went with her, or when she asked for me, which always made me feel good, it's all about me. She's asking for me, not mommy. I won. Makes you feel good to be wanted sometimes, unless they want you too much. Oh. Kind of busy. That's all about me too. Busy. A little tired tonight. We'll get to that later. Can we do this on the weekend? Let me see if I have any space. It just goes on and on. Or it doesn't. So she's having a hard time sleeping and she asks for me. And I have this little thing that I do called talking. And so I say, with the best tone I can muster, with the best inflection I can muster, with plenty of space between the words, because if you don't have space between the words, you've got a mush. Just like if you don't have space between the notes in the song, it's not music. It's noise. The space is as important as the notes. The space is as important as the words. It's obvious. So I got the tone down, I got the inflection down, and I got the technique, too. The technique is, if you'd like, you have the permission not to do it, if you'd like, you can notice, she's laying down now, right? You can notice your head resting on the pillow. Because it's already happening. I'm talking to the fact. We're doing meditation instructions. You can notice your head resting on the pillow, I say. And I track her like a hawk. Hawks can see 300 times better than we can. That's why they can fly through the forest at high speed and land on the squirrel. 300 times, I've been told. Greater visual acuity than the human eye has the hawk. I'm watching her like a hawk to see how her body's responding to. You can notice how the pillow's supporting your head. And then I take another fact of experience, like, you can notice how your breath is moving and how the bed is holding you. And then I try one up here. I say, you can notice the flannel sheet across your chest. And I am delighted and surprised when she says, I don't need you now, Daddy. And the All About Me was about ready to deliver the pithy instruction that would lead to the samadhi, the deep enlightenment. I don't need you now. But then there's another awareness, and the awareness is, oh, great, that's what it's supposed to be about. You don't need me. Right, good, I can go back to bed and think that I just helped you. A couple more times it happened with me being asked to help. And then eventually one day I asked her, years later I asked her, hey, you know that that thing that I used to talk about when you lay down? She said, yeah, I remember that. I said, well, like, what do you make of that now? She said, it's integrated. I can take care of myself. All About Me goes, cool. Another kind of cool voice comes that wasn't so cool, but more just, oh, wow, thank you. Us. There's a powerful, and it's powerful. And it's completely fragile and thin at the same time. It's so thin, it can't even be measured. A powerful, influential, thin as can be, belief, concept, that there is an objective me that the thought refers to. Seen through this powerful belief concept releases the insight into what love and compassion are. Because prior to that, there's ideas and feelings and a mix of perceptions about what love and compassion are. But it's not until that figment of imagination called the objective I or me is seen through, then something organic emerges, doesn't need a name, but the mind can name it. It flows organically out of the being that we are. Love and compassion are what is naturally here when it's seen that there is no actual I or me. That the idea of I or me is supposed to be representing. Because it clearly is not like the word carpet, thought carpet, and this. The idea is all it's ever been. Simply an idea. And that simply an idea part reveals the absolute fragility and thinness of that idea. To any longer entrance and suggest there's an actual me that the thought refers to. This is the fundamental shift. This is the shift beyond your shift. And you will still shit, and it will still smell, and it's part of your original nature, and it's fragrant. If there isn't any reaction, this is not just weird. I don't mean you need to spend a lot of time on it. Just notice it. It's deep. So sometimes we fight with other humans. We argue our point. We sometimes don't know what our point is, but we're still arguing as if we do. And our point is more important than theirs. And sometimes it changes to their point is more important than ours, and our heart opens a bit, but we're still arguing. So this same child of mine, when she was a baby, and by the way, she never engaged in the with the diaper, but her brother did as often as possible. She came out like a salamander and didn't breathe. He came out 9 pounds, 15 ounces, 2 weeks late, like one of those pumpkin seeds that you stick between your fingers that's wet and you shoot it at somebody. And there was anger there immediately in him. Where the fuck am I? And our wonderful Jewish friend, lovely woman who's now passed away from cancer, she said, "Hold him, Paul. Hold him tight." And I said, "Yaffa, shut up, he's mine." All about me again. God, it keeps cropping up. So she didn't know how to go. One day, her mother and I are just in the worst of it. Terrible. Can't remember the content. Don't want to. It's a kind of hell round, right? And we're going at it. And suddenly, together, we both go, and our daughter, who was taking a nap in the other room, has done something. And the odor is coming our way. That's why it's really important to get to know that smell and transcend any reaction to it. You don't need to go to India for that. You can get it right here, right now, before this retreat's over. So we're looking at each other, and we're in the middle of it, and all of a sudden there's the smell, and it hits us together. And remember, it's all about me, so somebody's got to do something different than this. And I surrender. Yes, I'll go. Of course. I'll do it. Brownie points all over me, right? I get to do it. I'm the good guy. So I go in there. And she's awake now, and she's laying on her back, and there's a moon pie in there. It's huge. And the smell increases, magnified, right up into the nostrils. And the laughter comes, and I realize the Dharma is all over the place. And from there on out, a little teaching emerges called the wink of the eye. And ever since that time, when the fight's emerging, whoever can remember to wink, there's the wink of the moon pie. The trance of me has a pith instruction. Love and compassion are not feelings so much as the allowing presence that sees and allows everything to be. It's an unconditioned presence, and it's always already here. The body is abiding in it. The breath is abiding in it. The thoughts and the feelings and the sense perceptions and even the thought, sense, feeling of me is abiding in it. It's so unbelievably, unconditionally benevolent that it allows all of the proliferations of the story, perception, thought of me. It says, you can all be here. This presence is ever allowing, and it doesn't change in the sense that it doesn't come and go. It's hidden in change. It's hidden inside change. Because the mind would be the only thing, the thought, the only thing that could say, this loving, compassionate presence is something other than this changing, dynamic, magnificent, unfolding life. It's not a thing like the carpet. It's not sounds like these words or objects in the room. It's that which allows these objects without any interference. It's that which allows the sensations and feelings and thoughts and breath and perceptions without any interference. That's because it's unconditioned. It has no conditionality. And the reason why it can never be found and never be lost is because it's always already here. It can't be lost because it doesn't go away. And it can never be found because there's no me that finds it. It's that which sees the me idea. This is the biggest sentence, in one sense, of the event or the retreat. there is only always that which is everything. And this everything is the allowing, loving, compassionate presence that's inseparable from everything that is. There is no practice of presence, and no one who practices being present. Presence is what sees the idea that I am going to practice being present. See it? Say it again. It's a big biggie. There is no practice of presence. And no one who practices being present. Presence is what sees the idea that I am going to practice being present. And the idea that I am going to practice being present is just an idea. Presence is what sees it. And it's completely fine with presence that that idea hang around as long as it wants, goes away as quick as it wants, doesn't matter. That's the shift from the me story to being. In some people's language, it's called the realization of being. And the idea of me can still present at any time it wants. It just no longer means the same thing. The fundamental shift releases the fixation on concepts about the truth. Concepts about practice, about meditation, about awakening, about life, about anything. This fundamental shift releases the fixations on concepts that masquerade as the truth. And then whatever is happening, as it's happening, in any instant, any time, any place, is the practice, it is the meditation, it is the awakening, it is the life, and it's everything. Notice the mind's association to the word everything. That's not what everything is. That's just the thought about everything. Everything is this. And whatever arises here, whenever it arises, is the everything. The truth is that meditation practice, spiritual path, I am meditating. I am being present in the moment. I am in the now. Are all simply ideas that do not refer to anything actual. The notion or belief that there is a moment or there is a now are simply concepts. Concepts that point to no thing. Again, unlike the concept carpet, there it is. Show me the now. Show me the moment. And please show me here. Where's the here? Very subtle concepts. Can you sense or maybe see the possibility of not needing to figure anything out at all. As that emerges, that emergence of clear seeing that there's nothing to figure out, that's the truth revealing itself beyond the concepts about truth. That's exactly how it works. What is happening is only always that which is everything. What is happening is only always that which is everything. The fundamental shift into seeing that nothing needs to be different, and yet all form keeps changing. Reveals that everything is already unbounded in its original free, spontaneous nature, just like that nature of the river out there, just like that nature of the sky out there, just like the nature of those trees out there. It's unbounded in its simple, original nature, reflecting back continually to the so-called me what it is. And so if something in here, just for a moment or more, or longer, believes or thinks, this is about getting rid of the me, it's completely confused. The me concept, idea, will arise and pass spontaneously on its own. It doesn't need to be gotten rid of. It's a beautiful thought. Or it's not a beautiful thought. Again, beauty is just an attribute that the mind puts on things because it looks good. The nature of unconditioned presence doesn't give attributes like that. It just sees and allows all the attributes to be. If you think compassion is about a feeling of caring for your neighbor, you could be right. But let me suggest something a little different. Compassion is that which dissolves ignorance. And when ignorance dissolves, your neighbor is you. Not in a woo-woo metaphysical sense, but in the sense that if you look in your neighbor's eyes and you don't get lost in the ideations and thoughts and memories and differences, you don't even have to look in the eyes. You can look anywhere, but the eyes work pretty nicely. Look in the eyes and begin to see that that which is coming towards so-called you is the same thing that's coming out from so-called you to that, and there's a place where those things meet, and that presence is the same. It's like one being looking out of 6.5 billion pairs of eyes. So the nature of what I'm pointing at is unbounded already. It's not going to become unbounded. It's unbounded by nature already. Even as it unfolds and shows its beautiful nature of change. This is beautiful. Isn't it magnificent to be here? And here isn't a place that you can point to, but it's a word that points at this. And as that's realized, that so-called here that isn't a place, the this that's being pointed at, is everywhere. It doesn't go away. It's what's called in Buddhism the always already, original nature. Always already. I hope you've liked some of what has come out here. I just cracked this book before this week together. It's been sitting around my house for years. This is from Zen Master Dogen. Zen Master Dogen was in the 13th century. He says it, I think, really, really well. He says, meditation is not a way to enlightenment, nor is it a method of achieving anything at all. It is peace and blessedness itself. It is the actualization of wisdom, the ultimate truth of the oneness of all things. In your meditation, you yourself are the mirror reflecting the solution of your problems. The human mind has absolute freedom within its true nature. You can attain this freedom intuitively. Don't work towards freedom, but allow the work itself to be freedom. When you want to rest, move your body slowly and quietly stand up. Practice the meditation in the morning or in the evening or at any leisure time during the day. You will soon realize that your mental burdens are dropping away one by one, and that you are gaining an intuitive power previously undreamed of. There have been thousands upon thousands of people who have practiced meditation and obtained its fruits. Don't doubt its possibilities because of the simplicity of the method. If you can't find the truth right where you are, where else do you think you'll find it? Life is short. No one knows what the next moment will bring. Use your time wisely. Take the opportunity. You will soon discover the treasure of wisdom, which in turn you can share abundantly with others, bringing them happiness and peace. We sit for a few minutes.